Hi, I'm Megan Asha, and I'm the founder of FounderMade, and this is my startup story.
Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story, and every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning, and every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is the startup story. The startup story would not be possible if it wasn't for the support of our sponsor, MoboCash. Move money like a miracle with MoboCash, the free money app that kicks cash. Download MoboCash app on iTunes or Google Play today, and you'll get your slick new Mobo card in the mail. You are no longer dependent upon digital currency alone, but you'll have a card that allows you to purchase at POS stations, restaurants, buy online, anywhere that you want to use your money. No credit check, no credit impact, quick direct deposit, FDIC insured, and free to register and activate. Support our sponsor, MoboCash. Visit movo.cash or thestartupstory.co/movocash. Before we jump into our episode this week, I want to share a review that was posted on our Facebook page by Josh Stein. I love listening to The Startup Story, and I have been an avid listener since the early days. James has a passion for telling stories that matter, and each story is inspiring and motivational. If you're an entrepreneur or want to become one, you need to listen to these stories. Thank you for this incredible recommendation, Josh. I hope more and more entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs are made aware of The Startup Story because these stories need to be heard. I truly believe that if more entrepreneurs can be made aware of the real challenges that occur on the entrepreneurial journey, then more entrepreneurs will be able to endure the challenges. So often we think we are alone in our challenges and struggles and then internalize that challenge as though we're not fit for entrepreneurship, when that is simply not the case. Unfortunately, we all hear about the startups that made it to the mountaintop, and not very often do we get the opportunity to hear the journey that got them there. So for all of you that are listening right now, if you have found any value in any of the Startup Story episodes, please leave a review on iTunes. I will continue to read one each week, so if you plug your brand in the review, then you will get a free mini ad in a podcast episode as well. In fact, a few years ago, there was a startup that hacked Shark Tank, the TV show, you know, with the four guys, Mark Cuban being one of them. They hacked Shark Tank with a QR code on their set design, and to this day, every time that episode airs, that QR code routes the user to their app download. If you leave a review on iTunes and insert your brand, you can have an ad that lives on. Speaking of advertising, if you have a business that is of value to entrepreneurs of all stages, then please visit thestartupstory.co/advertise to explore advertising your product or service to the growing Startup Story audience. Now let's jump into this week's episode. Our guest today is Megan Asha, founder of FounderMade. Megan and the FounderMade team are focused on bringing consumer brand companies together with some of the largest retail buyers in the world. So if you're a consumer product company in the beauty, health, and wellness verticals, then make sure to visit FounderMade.com to learn more. They're dedicated to helping small brands become medium brands and eventually large brands. In fact, on June 26th, they're having their East Coast Discovery Show where buyers, distributors, investors, and influencers all gather. So you might want to consider being there if you're in that industry. Again, visit FounderMade.com to learn more. I became aware of FounderMade after we launched our episode featuring Emma Rose Cohen of Final Straw, and I'm so glad I did. Megan is wired like I am, with a strong, authentic desire to help small businesses connect with the right people to fully maximize their brand and market potential. FounderMade is about bringing small consumer product brands to the table with large retail buyers. I love what this can do for the startups in the space, and I loved hearing Megan's personal startup story. In listening to Megan's startup story, you'll hear how important it is to stay focused on, well, as she puts it, your 90-year-old self, so that you can build a life you'll be proud of when, well, you've guessed it, 90. You'll learn how critical it is to shut down all the negative self-talk if you want any chance of success, and you will hear how important it is to have grace for yourself in this journey of entrepreneurship. Megan has helped hundreds of startups in the consumer product space elevate their brand and has a real passion for connecting the right people together for mutual value. What is so interesting about Megan's startup story is that it took various people in her own life to see her passion for connecting people together as a business before she ever saw it as a business for herself. But like all startup stories, we need to start at the very beginning to understand the full journey.
My dad came from India with a backpack and nothing else, and he bought a patent from Hewlett Packard, and he started a company when I was 2 years old. So ever since I was 2 years old, I heard his daddy's company going public. So
wow. He
basically 20 something years, you know, being the founder and then and CEO of this technology company that started with, you know, a patent and then turned into a publicly traded company. So I watched my dad's entrepreneurial journey. You know, it was up and down, and I'm sure now looking back and now seeing how it is to run a company, I can only imagine what it was like to have four kids, to, you know, be running a company, to be, you know, first generation, you know, Indian in America, working with the Wall Street bankers when he went public and the whole thing. It was definitely like a special journey for him. But I actually didn't think I was going to be an entrepreneur. I was into musical theater. I wanted to be an architect at some point. I liked math, but I was very type A. I had to be in charge a lot. So if I wasn't in like the highest math class, I'd figure out a way to get into the highest math class. If I wasn't in the highest dance class, because I wasn't even a great dancer, but I really just needed to make sure that I was always very type A, very like needed to be in the advance, needed to be the in charge of student council, whatever it was, you know, president of clubs, whatever it could be. I was definitely involved and needed a lot of activity.
Where do you think that came from, though? Is that, do you attribute that need, that wiring to your upbringing? Can you point to a single parent like, okay, this is where I got it from? Were you the oldest of multiple kids? Like, where do you think that came from?
So I was the oldest of multiple kids, and there was a 5-year age difference. That I think was a combination. And then I also just think it's a personality thing. I love being busy. And if I'm not busy, I'm stressed. So I'm so happy that I have found a way to be an entrepreneur, because otherwise I'd be stressed out about what I was not doing in the world. So at least I have a lot of energy. And it's and what I notice, even my dad, who's in his 70s, he has more energy now than he ever did. So I just know that it's probably going to just not get any better. It's going to get even better. My energy is going to get better throughout the years.
That's awesome. So you're wrapping up your high school years, and what did you think you wanted to be? What was your career trajectory? What were you thinking that your life was going to be post high school?
So I think I was a pleaser, even though that was like a big thing for me, is I think I really wanted to please my dad, especially because he had become successful, you know, and I'd watched that whole trajectory. And so I put him on a pedestal, and I was also like firstborn Indian. I felt like firstborn Indian daughter, son, whatever you want to say. It was this thing where I'd bring home an A or an A minus, and he'd say, "Where's the A plus?" Mm-hmm. So there was that type of, you know, wanting to please and win for maybe for love. I don't know exactly why. But so really, when I went to college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I first was a theater major, then went to psychology and became a psychology major, and then went into hedge funds after school because I thought it would impress my dad. So I thought, hey, you know, this is like the coolest part of the stock market, and, you know, I'll have independence, I'll make a lot of money, I'll get to work with these people that seem fancy. And, you know, what I learned, you know, I worked for two hedge funds, both one performed a mini Madoff, and then the other one went to jail. He was like the richest Sri Lankan, he went to jail.
Wow.
Very well known. This technology hedge fund on the street, very well known, you know, it's in the news. And so that was like my first, you know, welcome to careers and career trajectories. And, you know, the lesson I have is, you know, you can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have integrity, you have nothing.
Oh my goodness.
So that, I think it was a very interesting realization for me, just value system wise of what mattered and what really matters to me as I build a business and build a mission.
You know, it's interesting, and just hearing the early days of your story in the history of the Startup Story podcast, we've had a few first generation immigrants here on the show, founders, and there's a common thread in it. One is the work ethic. It's seeing what your parents had to do to make a life here. We've had two Irani Americans on the show, and there's a people pleasing element to it. Do you find that, just because I'm super interested in commonalities, do you find that to be something that is a very strong presence in children of first generation immigrants?
I think when you're a child of any immigrant, I think there's because your parents are working so hard and want to give you such a great life, they probably project, you know, what they would have hoped that they had had growing up. And I see that with a lot of my friends similar, where they just have something to prove. And they, you know, they know that their parents came here and started with nothing and started and really worked their works. And it's so, so important and valuable that the next generations build things. Like I am so lucky. I'm so blessed, but I need to spread the luck. And part of why I'm doing what I'm doing is because I couldn't imagine just sitting back and not building something when I have a family that came here and seized opportunity. And I also want to seize opportunity and build.
That's awesome. That is absolutely fantastic. So your hedge fund, the two funds that you work for have had a very interesting storyline to them, both within the realm of corruption. And so you went into hedge funds because you wanted to please your father, because, you know, musical theater and psychology were not a track that would follow that journey. So my question to you is, when those things happened, when those hedge funds closed, what did that mean for you? And what was that dialogue like with your father?
Well, it was funny because I had gotten this job and it was big job on Wall Street. We had every bank wining and dining us. I mean, the champagne was flowing. I was 24 in New York City, the whole thing. One of two girls in morning, or two women in more in the, you know, male dominated morning meetings, sort of like a Wolf of Wall Street thing. And I thought, oh my goodness, you know, look at me, dad. Like, I look at what I'm doing. And you know what he said? He says, I think that's interesting, but I feel bad because you're not really building anything. I came to this country to build and, you know, finance is great, but what are they building? And so then all of a sudden I'm like, wait. And so it was almost like this throughout my whole career with him for a while. Yeah. It was trying to please and do things, and then him giving feedback and saying it was almost not good enough or these little things until I had one of our first conferences, and he comes to the conference and he is blown away. And this was, it's so interesting that the thing that made me the most happy and that where I was most in the power of what I was actually supposed to do in the world was the thing that my dad ended up being the most proud of, even though it was such a hard journey to figure out. Yeah. And I wasn't doing it for him at that point. I was doing it for myself.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Isn't that amazing though, how those two align though, when you do it for yourself, also your parent, you know, as a parent, I can see that if my child was to be authentic to them, then that would bring me the greatest joy in what it is they do. So it's amazing how those two align. But before we jump ahead to Founder Made, what happened after the closing of the funds? You know, what was your next step? Did you move to another fund? Does it create are you now on a blacklist just because you're associated with those funds? Like, what was that next step?
Well, I left before the funds imploded, right? But definitely interesting journey on that. So I had left maybe 6 months before we found out that the bigger fund, the guy was going to jail, and nobody really knew about it and the whole thing. But I had left, and then I had taken a job at another fund, and I remember CES came along, and this is like the funny thing about all the breadcrumbs. Like, you don't really realize this is actually 10 years ago. I didn't want to be at any more hedge funds. I was like done with finance, and I have never done this in my entire life, but I was like, I need to be at CES. I know that I'm supposed to be at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, if you guys are familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And I just gave my 2 weeks and said I was going to CES, and I didn't have any job optionality. I went with a friend that ended up being a business partner for my first thing, for my first business. And went and had no idea why I was there, but I just was so obsessed with innovation. I was so obsessed with founders. I was so obsessed with technology. And that was like the gateway of trade shows. I don't know. It was just a whole thing that now I look back and we're building that something similar, but you know, in the consumer sector, and you never know why you nation of doing things. But I pulled up like a photo off of Facebook 10 years ago, and I'm like, I was like hugging the CES ball, and this was 10 years ago, and I had no idea why I was there. I just knew I wasn't going to be in finance anymore, and I needed to be in tech and media. And so you just don't know. I think that it's interesting when people come out of school, and we have a lot of, you know, interns and young people working at FounderMade, they all are worried and they're so stressed out about where are they going to go with their career. And I know I was in the same place. Yeah. It was not helpful for me to be really, really stressed out and hard on myself yeah. while I was trying to figure out my career. I try to tell them, listen, you're not going to really know, but what you need to do is give it your all in whatever job you're in, and you'll understand what you like, you don't like. And then at some point you're going to find your home, and it's just going to feel fully aligned with what you're supposed to do in the world.
Yeah. I mean, the 20s are a decade of training, you know, whether it be at college or whether it be in your first jobs, interns. I mean, that is a decade of training. I mean, if you're living 80 years, let's just say you're working 60, like that is a decade of training to just go into your 30s and slay, or your late 20s and get after it. I mean, people have too much pressure in their 20s because they see these tech startups, right? Where some 18-year-old is hacking out of high school, sells something for $100 million, or becomes Zuckerberg at 22 or whatever. I mean, they see these narratives and they think that that has to be the norm. And it is not. It is the anomaly. There's a selection bias, the fact that those get all the media and all the attention. And that's why we have the startup story, so we can tell all the real stories. So when you're at CES, I have not been to CES. It is a bucket list item. I want to go. That is everything. That's my nirvana, is what that is. And so when you're there, what are you processing, right? Because you felt like you were pulled there, but what were you processing? Were you thinking, I want to be in conventions? Were you thinking, I just want to be in technology? What was going on?
I am the friend of the founder. I love humans and I love watching humans build and I love understanding why humans build what they build. And I love innovation. And so for me, it was, you know, I think at some point I was in media and I was like, well, maybe I'm the Susie Orman of tech. Like, what is this was like the first, you know, iteration. And so that's when I started a digital media platform. That was like one of my first businesses as an entrepreneur. So I had no idea, you know, trade shows. I didn't even know what trade shows were for a long time. I just kind of was going to these conferences, just obsessed with founders, wanting to tell their story and wanting to help them build.
So let's put a timestamp on this. What year and how old were you for that CES trip?
I was in my 20s and it was 2007 or 2007 because it was the first iPhone.
Okay. iPhone. Oh, yeah. Oh, there you go.
I saw the first iPhone at one of the first like TechCrunch events that was like a cocktail party.
Okay.
So those were all the things. So it was CES, then it was TechCrunch, August Capital cocktail party, and then launched a digital media platform off of all that stuff.
So your first startup really came from your experience at CES. What was that startup? What was the name of it? What was the startup and what happened to it?
Yeah, so it was a company called Non-Society. We had angel investor from Sequoia who helped us start it. We believed that personalities were going to own the internet and that there was going to be personality-driven media. And this was before influencers. Yep. This was before any of the things. We would have brands, you know, pay us to cover things, live stream things. But this is like when influencers weren't getting paid and there was not even the word influencers. I think they had livecasters as the thing that they called us and that we did. We had a, you know, online web show. It was really a media platform. And what happened to it? It was, you know, we ended up selling, you know, Next New Network sold. So there was like a lot of different things that happened. And then, you know, I went and started a couple other companies after that.
What was the next one after that? How many companies have you started prior to FounderMade?
So I have done probably two others.
Okay.
And these were all just like the learning types of, so I had a product company that we scaled that pretty fast. And then I went to business school. Then while I was in business school, was asked to lead a startup like Warby Parker for swimwear. I had a therapy startup that we raised money for. So there was like a lot of different types of businesses that I was in. And then FounderMade really wasn't, I came out of business school thinking that I was working in venture capital and I was consulting for a couple startups and on the board of a couple startups. And I really started FounderMade just as a dinner series because it was what my 90-year-old self made my 90-year-old self happy. I said, well, when you're 90, when you when you look back on your life, what will make you happy? And I said, I'm just going to do these 12 dinners. I'm going to call them founder made. They're going to be like founder therapy. I'm going to get my friends who I knew in 2007 who had built, you know, they started with nothing and they built these like massive tech companies, these massive consumer companies. I'm going to have them speak at these dinners. And so then it just started as a dinner series. My friends, it started actually in the bottom basement of my apartment complex as a dinner. And it was like 40 of my friends and it was like, oh my God, $2,000. Like it was just funny. Like it, whatever dinner, paying for people's dinner was a push for me. And then my friends all said to me, they're like, follow the breadcrumbs. Like, and I was like, this isn't a business. This is just dinners. This is just networking dinners. Like, what is the outcome here? You know, it started, I was juggling two jobs but it was something that I just loved doing. And Daniel from Kind Bar, he was launching a book. And I wanted him to speak at one of our dinners and his press people said, no, well, you need 300 people to show up at this dinner. And I said, well, we'll just do a conference. And I had launched conferences before. I'd done, you know, that while I was in business school, I'd helped with a conference launch in fashion. And so I said, okay, I'm just going to basically do TechCrunch for consumer founders. We had it was from 6 to 9 p.m. We were expecting 100 people, 400 people showed up. We sold tickets. I had little exhibitor booths at the Gansevoort Hotel. Daniel from Kind Bar, we had all these like sharks that were wellness founders judging a wellness competition with Well and Good. And it was like our first iteration of our first, you know, mini conference. You know, it was definitely a learning experience and it was awesome. And I had like gift bags. I had ironed on mantras on these gift bags, like, the future. I mean, it was very special, the whole thing.
So there's a lot I want to unpack there real quick. And just so I can fully understand, the conference came because you wanted Daniel, the founder of Kind Bar, present. I love that. You had a target, you went after it, and you built it in order to get him there. And I love every bit about that. That is a mindset that I share. Absolutely love it. Before we continue on with Megan's startup story, I want to take a quick moment to spotlight a new partnership with a former founder that we've had on the show, Goli Kalkaran with Lesson from a Quitter podcast. After we had Goli on the show, I really became a fan of hers and started listening to her podcast. I realized that there might be some startup story listeners that would find some real value in listening to Goli's show and hearing from the guests that she has on. So if you found yourself a little bit stuck in a career and think there's no way out of the path that you're on, then make sure to listen to the Lessons from a Quitter podcast. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It's really a great show, and Goli does a phenomenal job with it. All right, now let's get back to Megan's startup story. We talk about following the breadcrumbs to get to your dinners, right? And we skipped over, we spoke briefly about the consumer package product you had, the health and wellness products you had. When you look at those breadcrumbs up to your dinners, right? What were the breadcrumbs for you? How did you connect all the dots to realize this is the path I need to continue on? What were those dots for you?
Number one was the way I felt every single time I did this. It was a totally different feeling than anything I was working on and anything I had done before. So it's like when you're in the flow, mm-hmm. that's the bread. I think that's in your energy and also just my interest level. Like it never felt like work. It always felt more like a hobby or play. And so I didn't consider Founder Made a business for a good year and a half until I looked back and I said, oh, we've really made some real revenue.
Yeah.
I'm still juggling these two jobs. I had an amazing, amazing advisor who's pretty magical and has done like a ton of great work advising a lot of my friends who've built billion-dollar companies. This woman, Anjula, who's Priyanka Chopra's manager. And she said to me, she's like, Founder Made, I can't stop thinking about it. I see consumer, I see celebrity. I think that there's something here. And I think you're going to make a big company out of this thing. And so I just like these little breadcrumbs of people believing in me when I didn't believe in myself, people believing in the business and seeing something more than what it was at the current iteration and then just continuing to grow it.
When you look back, this is a dialogue I've had with numerous founders, but when you look back on those moments of validation where other people were believing in you and in the concept before you were even there, what did that do to you from a confidence and a validation perspective?
It's so interesting because I think you go through different phases of confidence in your leadership and in your ability to execute as an entrepreneur. And this is actually something I think you have to, as you turn into a better leader, you have to really work on, which is you could get all the outside accolades you want from other people telling you, but if you don't actually feel like you are confident and you have, and you're confident in your vision and you're confident on your plan, it doesn't matter. But of course it felt great to have these people believe in it, but it's also felt like there was a great responsibility for me to do and say, like, once I said I was going to build this company,
yeah,
it's time to build this company. And, you know, I'm extremely, just like I was very competitive when I was in elementary school and high school, I'm extremely competitive. It's not competitive with other people. It's actually competitive with myself.
Yeah.
I know my future self in 10 years and I know where I want to take this company, and we're at very like V1 where we want to take it.
That's awesome.
But the good news is, you know, we've created an awesome, you know, profitable business in V1. And
so I have so many more questions about the early stages of FounderMade and when you were working those two jobs. But before we get there, I just want to unpack for the listeners, and more so, I want you to unpack for the listeners, what is FounderMade? So when we start as we continue to reference FounderMade, they have a framework for what FounderMade is. So what is FounderMade?
So FounderMade discovers the best consumer brands and we help them build. And the way that we do that is through summits. So we have two discovery shows. We have a discovery show on the East and the West Coast. And those are really brand discovery conferences where we have the retailers. So think like Whole Foods, Ulta, Sephora, CVS, Walgreens, you name it, meet with the top tier consumer brands in food, wellness, and beauty. And then we also have investors, M&A partners. So we've really created this ecosystem where if you have a product or a product launch, we can help you build and we can help you get distribution and get you investment and get you, you know, hopefully if you want to sell, get you sold to a bigger strategic.
That is awesome. Okay. So now that the listeners have a framework for it, your dinners were an evening thing. You referenced it a few times. You're working two jobs. What were those jobs and what are all the things you did related to FounderMade in the evening hours, on the side, on the weekend? How did you build it up to what point before you decided, all right, I need to just go full tilt on this?
So the two jobs, one was working at a venture capital firm and the other one was I was doing business development. I had actually picked after business school. I said, I don't know if I'm that good at sales. Well, I think I'm good at sales, but I don't know if I'm that good at sales. And so I had my friend who had a startup and he said, I think you need to help me with business development for my startup. And I went and probably was flying around like 150 days out of that year, basically selling the hardest thing to sell, like cold call HR contingent workforce stuff. And so he knew I was an entrepreneur, so I changed his branding. Like, and now they're doing amazing. I got like a ton of great accounts for him. It was super, super fun just to see if I was any good. And I loved the fact that I had to cold call. The one thing I would say as an entrepreneur, or anybody who wants to really build a business, you have to be so fearless and you have to figure out, like, you have to be able to like break through walls to get wherever you're going to go and be super creative and not take it personally. And just know that like we have this book at our office that says, Reject Me, I Love It. And when we were cold calling, you know, when we first started FounderMade full time and we were cold calling, it was two people. It was me and our CRO. And we'd literally be like, Reject Me, I Love You. How many no's are we going to get? Let's see how many no's we can get. And now it's funny. All these people that had said no, you know, in the early days now come to us and ask, you know, to work with us. So it's been like but it's all about perseverance. Yeah. It's all about energy. It's all about, you know, being of your word and coming to the table and doing right and really building a, you know, genuine value for, you know, the people that you're working with.
What did you grow FounderMade to in order for you to start processing, this is a business and this is my full-time business now?
We had done a couple conferences and it was started off as investor conferences. They weren't retailer brand conferences. I came from TechCrunch days. So I thought the buyer and the seller were the investors and the brands. Of course, consumer products, once you have a consumer product, what do you need once you've created a beauty or a food brand? You need distribution, you need sales. So we quickly learned to change the model. And once we changed the model, and once I saw, I mean, of course we made revenue and that was, you know, and also the reason it took me a long time to really commit that and focus full-time on FounderMade was because in my past startups, I had like quickly raised money, had kind of gone all in, and I had been burned. I had gone all in and had not had, I wanted to make sure that the next business I did had a very clear business model, clear cash flow model, great people that were working on it. And I think, you know, it's one thing to, you know, and everybody has their thing. It's one thing to raise money. It's another thing to really build a true business that makes money and has good EBITDA. And, you know, I was really focused on that before. And I was a little scared to go back into, into startups, to be honest.
And there's definitely scars that come from it. In fact, a couple episodes ago, we had Zach Swire with Good Grains, a very healthy breakfast foods company brand. And part of his journey was he had an ad agency that he built very successfully, had this idea for a technology play, became enamored with the technology play, went through the fundraising side of that. And because of that, shut down the ad agency. Well, he began to focus less on building a great product in the tech startup and more so about fundraising. When I asked him the similar question, if you could go back, what would you have changed? He said, I would have just focused on building service and a product. I would not have focused on raising money. And it's just, we get enamored with that idea. And so I can hear in your story a little bit of that learning as well, as in just build a great business, build a great product. So I do have to ask though, because I, being an entrepreneur, having lost various times in my startups, was there a loss of a startup in your journey? Was there a significant failure in your journey that kind of left a little bit of a scar that you don't want to repeat in this next round?
I mean, there's definitely a combination of scars. I think for me, there were partnerships. So in some of the past businesses, and it's really interesting, nobody really tells you this, but, and they don't even teach you in business school, but when you set up a company, you shouldn't have 50-50 ownership with anyone. You shouldn't have equal, like it really needs to be one person needs to be at the helm, even if you, one person has 51% or whatever it is. And so a lot of the, like one of my startups, we had done it, had great lawyers, like A+, the best lawyers in New York City. And they had set it up like that. And then when it came to people, it came to like us not wanting to work together, it was one of those things where it almost became like this divorce. It was like a fairy. And I was like, wait, we haven't even really started yet. And we, you know, raised other people's money and we're in this, it was just a very interesting thing. So, and what you'll notice, I think if you're an entrepreneur is you'll have like certain things that are your Achilles heel that will keep revisiting and revisiting until you actually face them and you face them with like confidence and you know, like, and clarity on how you want to change the trajectory.
What was that for you? What's your Achilles heel?
Certain partnerships. I just think I would sometimes discount my abilities and I think I would need other people that maybe I thought would fill in the gaps. And it's not that I think that team and having great people, but I would have this archetype of person that I would continue to start businesses with. And they weren't aligned as much as on value system, or it was just, we just weren't aligned in the same way. I mean, and I, again, like I totally believe in partnerships, love partnerships, but there were just this, it was like this repeat thing over and over again when in my 20s of, you know, having these certain types of partners that I would start businesses with. And then we wouldn't get to the place where we would need to build a real business.
So for the listener that's out there, that is another you, that has the same Achilles heel, what advice would you give them?
Know that you're always going to have a little bit of the doubts. Part of doing anything, and especially if you need to build something, there is a sensitivity and there is the EQ and there is a lot of things that you're up against so many no's and you're up against having to like show the world what you got, right? And so I would just say, don't be so hard on yourself as you're trying to build your business. I think I beat myself up a lot and it actually took away a lot of my energy and my power and my leadership as I was building. I would be like, it's like when you're trying to climb a hill. If you're trying to climb Machu Picchu, is it helpful for you to say, hey, you know what? I don't think you have your legs are not working on this hill. Or, you know, really not. This hill is really high, and you don't have one. This is horrible. This is like a horrible hill to climb. Like you can't be negative while you're trying to climb the hill, and you can't be hard on yourself while you're trying to climb the hill, and you can't, you know, expect yourself to climb the hill really fast if you've never climbed Machu Picchu. It's just like you're learning, and be gentle. You're learning. This is like, it's so funny. I think humans, and I definitely work on this. I think humans are just exceptionally hard on themselves, and just know that it's really, really hard to build a business. Yeah. It's not an easy thing. And then once you level up to X millions of dollar company, then the next level comes, and then you have other problems. So it's like, you're not, I always thought when I first started my companies, I'd be like, this, like I idealized, just like you'd idealize a romantic relationship. Like it's going to be perfect. Amazing. And so when I was younger and I do these startups, when it got hard, I didn't stay the course. I was sort of a child about it. And I was sort of a brat about it. And I think part of building any real long lasting business is perseverance and showing up every single day and trying the best that you can and problem solving. And just knowing that, you know, once you accept that there's always going to be problems and that's part of the fun of it, you make it more of a game than anything else. You don't take it personally. Then it actually becomes, you know, a dream business and super, super fun to build.
That was amazing. And for all listeners, you know, you're probably in a car right now, maybe on a run, and she was just dropping all that knowledge out there. You might want to just go back to your desk, pull up the browser and go back about 5 minutes and just write all those notes down. There was so much rich stuff there. If you've been around the Startup Story for any length of time, you've heard it time and time again. The doubt will never leave you. You are trying to do something that very few people have. That is birth a company out of nothing, trying to find a market fit for something that may not have existed before, trying to bring people together that may not have connected so easily before, trying to disrupt something that many people don't want disrupted. There's so much friction in every element of being an entrepreneur that the doubt is always going to be there. And everything you just mentioned there about ensuring that that narrative as you're climbing that hill is not part of your vocabulary is so helpful. So that was incredibly powerful, Megan. Now, what year did FounderMade begin?
The first dinner in my basement was like 2015.
So that's the birth of FounderMade, right? That dinner.
It wasn't a real company though. I mean, it was dinners, right?
So when do you consider the beginning of FounderMade?
The conference that scared me to launch because I thought I'd have to mortgage my house to pay for it was at Spring Studios in 2016. And it was a Future Promise show, and it was on a Saturday. It was raining, and I remember my sister's husband, who's like top lawyer in the city and very hard on everybody. He said, "Oh, Megan, this you finally found your thing." And it was like one of those days where I could feel my 90-year-old self smiling, and I just was in flow and knew that I was supposed to do this.
So spring of 2016 was the first event. That's where you consider the beginning of FounderMade. A lot can happen in 3 years, right? And a lot has happened in 3 years. Can you take us along this year one journey and then where we are at today? And how is it different than what you believed you were building in the beginning?
So year one, which was 2016, first of all, I didn't think it was a business until 2017. Mm. So I was still juggling two jobs, kind of working on this part-time. We launched, you know, four different conferences. They were more summits. So they were maybe 20 brands and, you know, a couple hundred people. They were investing in wellness, investing in food. Actually, I forget this. In 2016, we had investors, when they came to the conference, they gave me a term sheet. And they said, we want to invest in this. We can see that you are going to build, what's the guy who owns Vegas he built Shell Adelson's like massive empire. Yeah, yeah. You're going to build trade shows. Like we've never seen trade shows. We love this business. And it's so interesting because I am so glad that I didn't, you know, accept those terms or, you know, it was just not the right time. So we basically, you know, bootstrapped it. We didn't have to raise any money. And then in 2017, you know, when I finally stopped both of my jobs, we got office space And it's all these little pieces of the journey where we couldn't afford office space in fancy New York like at that time, right? It was like every price per square foot on fancy New York on Broadway and Prince, which is where we have office space. All of a sudden I see this office space. I'm like, that's our office. And it was the cheapest office space I'd ever seen. I don't know how we even have this. It's like, I have a deal. I still have the, you know, I still, me and the landlord are now best friends and working on other deals together. But it's these little things where I was like, oh, the breadcrumbs, like follow the breadcrumbs. Yeah. And the universe, whatever you believe in, gives you different pieces of the journey. And I remember getting that office space and crying in, or not crying. I was crying in the stairwell because I was like, I don't know this burn rate that we have. I can't believe that I don't know how we're going to pay for this office space now. Like it's like, yeah. And now it's, that's the less, like the, you know, the smallest part of our burn right now. But it's just been such an interesting journey of leveling up and just following the breadcrumbs piece by piece by piece. One of the other things that was awesome on the journey was, you know, we brought in a head of, and this was, you know, I knew this woman socially, but we brought in a CRO and she didn't even want to do sales. Like she said, she came to me and she's like, I kind of want to do account management. And she turned into being one of, I consider her my partner now. She turned into being one of the best sales leaders I've ever
That's awesome.
And watching her grow into, you know, her leadership and leading a team and hiring. And so it's been this very interesting trajectory of us starting literally just with these small conferences that we're doing as side businesses and then looking at it. And then the other, you know, pieces, we also brought in the CFO who helped scale CES. So that was like getting expertise in the trade show business and in general was huge for us. There's a lot of booths you have to keep track of,
yeah. Finding
lots of logistics, lots of stuff at scale. But there's just these like little pieces of different, you know, we just brought in someone from TED who's helping us launch a CEO summit. As we're building this team, it's been a really fun thing to get piece by piece these little things in you know, 2 years.
In this journey a founder made is, while you turned down the term sheet early stage, is it still bootstrap?
We raised a little bit of money from we didn't really need it. So we have actually never touched it, but it was from Gary Vaynerchuk. We love Gary V. Gary V was, he was a great friend and he was really a good supporter of my first business. So he was great. And then, you know, but we really hadn't, because we're in the events trade show business, we operate off of deferred revenue. So we haven't really had to raise any money, but it's been an awesome journey.
And what is the current state of FounderMade and where do you see it in another 3 years?
So current state, we have the discovery shows and those will continue to grow. And the dream and I think the mission is that we will have a show that's as big as Consumer Electronics Show and as valuable, but for consumer brands and food, wellness, beauty. So all products that you need to touch, taste, see, and smell, right? Yeah. Like that's, you can't, everyone says, oh, trade shows, you know, they're consolidating. Well, the fact of the matter is you have to, if you're at, especially we get brands sent to us all the time and we're the curator. So we get a brand sent, the brand looks beautiful, but if you taste the product or you smell the product and it's terrible, you actually have to go to these shows and actually taste them and see them. That is part of, you know, that just building that show out. We're launching a CEO summit this year with Hire from TED. And that will be, you know, part of a membership that we launch. And then we have a wholesale marketplace where at our shows, you know, we have brands meet retailers. So you can basically sign up for 10 strategic meetings and a brand can meet, you know, Whole Foods, Ulta, whatever their hit list is for retailers if the retailers opt in. And so what we want to do and what we are beta testing currently is a wholesale marketplace, where we have the brands and the retailers transact on our wholesale marketplace platform.
That is awesome. It's amazing to me how small the world is, because the reason I became aware of FounderMade is because of a past guest with Emma Rose Cohen and Final Straw. And it was one of your account reps that reached out to me because of Emma's episode, and her story is incredible. Just the Kickstarter campaign. I love her, as she used, I'm gonna use her phrase, her 14-year-old boy humor. Like she's so wonderful. And it's, as I became aware of FounderMade, I really, I love what it is you're doing because I'm so small business minded. Like I love the startups. I love small businesses. I love seeing them connect with brands that really they probably never dreamed of in some cases. So the fact that you're providing this mechanism for brands to meet with large buyers is so incredibly powerful. And I know there's so much I can think through what a founder might be going through as they're preparing for your event and just the opportunity to meet with Bloomingdale's or whoever Whole Foods or whoever the big buyers are. I can picture the level of excitement and anticipation and hope that they have for their own small company as they come to this. And I love that you're facilitating that because small businesses run the world, period. And I am such a proponent for it. So I love what you're doing for small businesses. And as a founder, maybe some of those brands are brands that we'll have on the show later on. And I'm going to ask this question to them and they may plug your name in there. But this question I have for you now is one I ask all of my founders. If you were to look back along your journey, there are people that have played such a critical role at certain moments. Who are those people that you're so incredibly grateful for? And the reason I ask that question is that I believe that if we lose our perspective of gratitude for all of those who have poured into us throughout our many years, even if it was just for a season, if we lose that perspective, we'll begin to think we did it on our own, and that will inevitably lead to our failure. So for you, when you look back on your journey, who do you point to with such immense gratitude for what they have contributed to your journey?
In the beginning of the journey, because I think that I had these learnings from these past business partners. I'm grateful for those past learnings because I would never be who I am. I had to go through so much to really own, what I really wanted to do in the world. And then of course my fiance, who is a startup founder as well, he's doing a big search company, he believed in me when nobody else, when I was having a partnership. I think we met when we, 6 years ago when I was having partnership things and I was in school, I was going to Columbia and he was getting his master's in computer science. We both were kind of in school and then turned startup founders. And I think he believed in me and was supportive of these little dinners that I was doing and in our apartment That's complex. Awesome. And I think just even us, I'm inspired by him, how he leads this company and how he, operates and is the real deal. And he doesn't, say too much. He's always of his word on everything. So it's really awesome. And then I think the team that we have and the people that I get to build with, Michelle, who leads our sales, she steps up. She helps everybody become better, be more transparent. We have extremely honest, frank conversations, which we love. We love the conversations. And we're all fighting for the same thing, which is for the good of our customers and to really drive value and be of our word.
That's awesome. Oh, I love all of that. As our time comes to an end, there's one final question that I ask every founder. And right now we've been talking to tens of thousands of listeners that are hearing your startup story. And the Startup Story podcast is a mentorship. I mean, it's an hour of sitting with a founder and hearing their journey and seeing some of the punches to the gut that they've taken and how they've recovered and where they're at now, what level of successes they have. But right now I want you to speak to just one of those entrepreneurs listening, whether they're entrepreneurs that have a business and they're just incredibly frustrated with the lack of growth that they have, or they're a defeated entrepreneur who's taken so many hits and never had anything successful and they're starting to doubt that they're able to execute and pull something off. Or maybe they're just the entrepreneur who's still trying to find their way, but they're working in 9 to 5 and they have a mortgage and kids and they just think, oh, I missed my window opportunity. If you could speak to any singular person, who would it be and what would you say to them?
I think the person that doesn't know what they want to do, I spent a lot of time asking everyone, what business should I do? I was looking for the business whisperer. Yeah. I was like, what should I do? What should I do in the world? It's like the career search. And I was stressed out it was crazy. And then I would say, okay, well, maybe I'll do this business or maybe I'll do this partnership. The only thing you need to ask yourself is, we're all going to die, unfortunately. And we're all on a time frame. When you're 90, what will make you happy and how and what do you want to build? It is okay if it starts small. Every single thing that's ever been built in this world started with an idea, and it started small. And all these small businesses, the reason that I'm so excited about what we're building is because we get to help these small businesses become big, medium businesses, become big businesses, and then hopefully mentor. That's part of the whole cycle of being an entrepreneur. The journey is the thing. It's who you become on the way to the success. You have to be, in order to get to the next level, you have to become a completely different person and level up. So don't be so hard on yourself. No one ever, stop beating yourself up. It's all gonna be fine. We're all above the ground winning.
Megan's perspective on the entrepreneurial journey is one that I hope you can adopt as your own. Entrepreneurship is incredibly challenging, and all cards are stacked against you. So have some grace for yourself as you build your business. It is not going to be easy. It will never be linear, and you will always have to adapt based on the stage you are at right now. It's like trying to run on the beach. The sand is going to shift with every step that you take, but every step will still get you a little bit farther towards your goal. Megan talked about how absurd it would be to climb Machu Picchu while complaining about your shortcomings. That negative self-talk will do you no good, and the same goes for entrepreneurship. Nobody is going to believe in your business more than you do, so do not internalize the rejection or skepticism thrown your way. Know that rejection is part of the entrepreneurial journey. There's not a single startup that did not have their fair share of rejection and skepticism. We just don't always hear about it, which is one reason why I started the Startup Story. Entrepreneurship is hard, but that is also what makes it so rewarding. There really is nothing else like it. I hope you found some real value in Megan's journey and her willingness to share with us. If you've been around the Startup Story for any length of time, then you know how much emphasis I put on the idea that entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. And what is really cool about FounderMade is that they too believe in entrepreneurs supporting entrepreneurs. So if you know of any consumer innovation, tell them about FounderMade. That simple introduction could change the entire trajectory for your friend or contact. Another way to support Megan and what she's building with FounderMade is to follow them on all the social platforms with the username FounderMade. Time and time again, we hear from our founders how hard it is to raise their message above all the noise out there on social media. So I hope you will take 30 seconds to follow them on your favorite social channel and help raise awareness for this great business. Entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs, so let's make sure to show up for Megan and FounderMade. Now for my personal ask. The Startup Story community has been so incredible with sharing our podcast with others. But we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We are a startup, and the most powerful way you can support the Startup Story podcast is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at thestartupstory.co. Share the Startup Story on your social media, either with a link or a screenshot. Make sure you tag or mention us at thestartupstory.co so we can see your help and say thank you for it. And lastly, share the podcast on your LinkedIn profile. The Startup Story is for entrepreneurs, so please do not underestimate the power of sharing the Startup Story on your LinkedIn profile so other entrepreneurs can discover us. In fact, most people struggle to share good content on LinkedIn anyways, so if you want to support the Startup Story, then search for the Startup Story company page, follow us, and share our post to help encourage other founders and spread the word about the podcast. Every single founder has a story, and the startup stories we bring to you every week can encourage and inspire another founder. It might just be what they needed to hear to keep moving forward on their dreams. I look forward to sharing these stories every Tuesday with hopes to inspire you to start your story. If you like this podcast and are thinking of creating your own, consider talking to my producer, Danny Osment. He helps thought leaders, influencers, executives, and authors create, launch, and produce podcasts that grow their business and make a real impact in this world. You can contact him today at emeraldcitypro.com/startupstory.